feel all right now.
Hey, I feel all right now.
Do you feel like I do right now?
Do you feel like I do right now?
Motivated.
Motivated.
Sky high.
Sky high.
Rock steady.
Rock steady.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can do it.
I can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the Airsoft No Sim Tactical Training Podcast, anytime, anywhere.
All right, folks, welcome back to another installment of the Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast. As always, I'm Lex. This episode's going to be a little different than all the other episodes because rather than talking about a tactic or a technique or a procedure, we're going to be talking about Rhodesian Revolt. Rhodesian Revolt 15 happens down in the sandbox in Utah. One of the first things I've got to talk about is it's out in the middle of nowhere. And there is no cell service. When they post up and they say there is no cell service, they are not joking. There is no cell service. And it's amazing. It's one of the first events that I've gone to where I didn't see anybody worrying about calling home, anybody worrying about, you know, checking their cell phone, checking Facebook, posting up selfies, yada, yada, yada. I mean, there was a little bit of hit and miss for a lot of people because they didn't realize there wasn't any cell service. I was one included. I figured I had a little bit more time before I hit the little town of Eureka before I lost cell service so I could call home, tell the wife I'd made it down there safe and sound, all that good stuff. But overall, it's actually an enhancer to the event. So you get down there to the sandbox, and I wasn't sure what I was getting myself into when I signed up for your Rhodesian Revolt. Good buddy of mine, Dice, he preached Rhodesian Revolt. He went last year. It was his first year. He's like, you've got to go with you. You got to go with me. So I'm like, okay. Well, when the price popped up on the internet, when it cost, how much it cost, I was like, $54. I can do $54. That's not bad at all. And considering the drive is less than 10 hours with stops and food and everything else, with a couple other guys, we took the whole Buffalo crew down there. It was actually a great trip, a lot of fun, a great drive there and back, not bad at all. So getting into the meat and potatoes of what Rhodesian Revolt is. It's been going on, I believe, for 4 years now, and essentially what you're going to do, what you end up doing is you end up joining one of three factions. You have the Fifth Column, you have the Coalition Forces, and then you have BRG, Black River Group. I played for Black River Group. Group of mercenaries. Their whole intent is making money and spending money. Basically doing it any way, shape, or form. Had a blast playing Black River Group. Got put in charge of a Charlie squad. We had three actual squads that we run down there. We took a coalition of Colorado players and Wyoming players, and we all played for Black River Group. And we broke them up into, we had an Alpha Squad, Charlie Squad, and then Buffalo was Bravo Squad, and we tried to support each other accordingly, and of course, throughout the night, it kind of got crazy, things happened, but overall, we pretty much run with each other. A lot of the things right off the bat, if you haven't chronoed your gun before you get to Rhodesian Revolt, chrono your gun. Take the time, take it into a shop, get it set at 350. I don't know how many times I saw people have to go back, try to modify their weapon, whatever the case is, to get it to shoot under that 350. They are insistent on being under 350 FPS. And I can tell you that being at 350 FPS, it's not really an issue. I mean, they really know that terrain really well. The play area is, it plays to that 350 FPS. As I said, you really don't need anything above 350 FPS. One of the key things you want to do is if you're running an HPA gun, chrono it before you go down there, set it, and then as soon as you get down there, make sure you tell them that you're running an HPA gun. I run my Tippmann the whole weekend. One of the things I noticed is I chronoed it up here at home and had it set at 345, 350. When I got down to Utah and chronoed it, I was shooting at 390. I still really haven't figured that out. We think maybe altitude, change. It was the same setup across the board. I'm not sure. But you want to make sure you take a chrono with you so you can do your adjustments. Go hit the chrono, go back, adjust, do what you need to do. That's one of the first things. They're going to check your gear. They're going to take pictures of your weapons, everything in that. If you're running multiple weapons, get them all set up beforehand. That was one of the hardest parts for us, is we had Buffalo with us, and we had close to 4 separate weapon systems we had to get chronoed. And because of the amount of people trying to check in at that time, they couldn't do one weapon at a time. We had to wait until everybody else had gotten done before we could go in and get our weapons chronoed. So you want to make sure you get the stuff chronoed and get it set up properly beforehand. Do not go down there thinking they're going to let you play with a 400 FPS gun just because it's a brand new gun. Get it set up for the 350 and you're good to go. I mean, gear is pretty standard. They list their gear list on. They do a great job listing gear lists, putting up videos, all that good stuff. Really gets you in the immersion of the game. As soon as you get down there, you're going to set up camp. I mean, key thing is get set up, get prepared, get your gear all set up and good to go. Because you got your briefings in the evenings. Bone up on your squad tactics. That was one of the things that I found interesting and I liked about Rhodesian Revolt this year, was when we showed up, they actually put anybody that had not attended a Rhodesian Revolt event before through a quick down and dirty little video on squad tactics. And I sat and watched it, and it was in depth enough for what they needed to get across for the event. It was a good touch to the whole aspect of including tactics and pushing it more from just a mob mentality to a tactical mindset, and that what they want the game to be. I really like that aspect. I wish more event hosts would do something along those lines. I was kind of upset on the aspect that, because last year they had people actually teaching squad tactics. You had to go through a squad tactics class when you checked in before you got to play. I was upset this year that they didn't get to have that happen, but the logistical issues and everything else, it kind of fell through. I would love to see that get incorporated again, and especially, at a lot of different host events. It really enhances the gameplay. It really kicks it up from being just a BB Wars go out and shoot each other to a more tactically optionized game. So, Friday night, check in, set up our camp. Went to sleep. I think we hit the rack at about 11:30, 12. Woke up at ungodly hour in the morning. We decided we're going to get up, do gear inspections, get all ready to go. I mean, essentially, we could have probably slept for another hour or so and still been good to go because we were all prepped the night before. But got up, and then we move out to Rhodesia. Now, the key thing is you walk into Rhodesia. You have a vehicle that you can run equipment in real quick, but you yourself should walk in. And I like this. I like this touch to it. I mean, me personally, it was part of the event. It was what made the event so great for me, was that ruck into Rhodesia. Throw my pack on, and it also enhances and reinforces the live out of your pack for 24 hours type deal. Because that's the thing. You have to survive with what you have in your pack and on your gear for 24 hours. And for me, this was a great event for me to test my loadout, to test what I could throw on my pack. Because essentially what I did is I took a small pack. I threw an extra HPA bottle in there. I threw an extra bottle of BBs, I threw a couple chem lights, battery for my radio, my camera, which I never ended up using. What else did I throw in there? My shotgun shells, an MRE, and that was pretty much it in my pack. And then on my gear, I had my battle belt, my harness, compass, GPS, my magazines. I run 6 magazines throughout the night. Pretty much a standard loadout for what I do, and then I had my butt pack on. It had some extra additional stuff in there, but for the most part, I was set up with my gear for 24 hours. And so you ruck in, you hump into your area, depending on where you're going, or depends on what team. Like coalition forces use their buggy to zoom back and forth in and out. I applaud them for being smart about it, but at the same time, it wasn't for me. That marching, that foot patrol into the area was what set the It immediately set what was going on. It set the premises to you're going into a potentially hostile environment. I mean, we had a column, we had a tactical column going on. People started, I mean, as soon as they stepped off, they got in that mindset. It was great because we got to the FOB, we figured out what tent we were at, and we immediately started, I immediately had guys starting to volunteer to go out and do security, find out what the area looked like, locate key strategic locations, things of that nature. And I mean, that's immediately at 9 o'clock as soon as we got out there. And we only had a handful at first, but then we got more coming and coming as they come along. So you move in, you occupy your FOB, we started setting up security. That's the start of the game, essentially. Now, each side has a little different, like Coalition goes a little bit further, and then you have Fifth Column, who this go-around, Fifth Column had to insert, just like we did, with their pack, but they had the furthest to go into the field. And they had two choices. They could go down around beside Coalition, or they could come by BRG through the checkpoint at BRG at the border. And it made it a really interesting situation because you can set the premises of the game right there on the spot, you know, how you're going to handle dealing with Fifth Column and how you're going to handle dealing with Coalition. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of back and forth going on. You know, throughout the whole game, there was a lot of backstabbing, which was it's inherent to the game. It's what Black River Group's supposed to do anyways, but it was really interesting to watch it happen. I mean, one side we're working with Fifth Column, the next minute we're working with Coalition, the next minute we're not working with anybody. Fifth Column and Coalition are working with each other. You never really knew when you made contact with somebody if they were friendly or they were enemy. So, and then one of the other key factors that I really enjoyed about the game was we actually had to stand guard. Charlie got tasked right off the bat with going up and securing our SAM site. And the way the SAM sites work, it's really interesting. They have SAM sites set up, and they're about 500 meters away from each FOB. And you have these SAM sites that will stop anybody's aircraft from coming in and bombing your FOB. As soon as those SAM sites are turned off, aircraft can come overhead and drop bombs on your FOB, and everybody's in the FOB's dead, all that good stuff. So you want to protect your SAM site. So we moved out as Charlie's squad moves out, and I had 14 guys in my squad, 14 guys and gals in my squad. I think I had one of the only females that made it the 24 hours in Charlie's squad. Bo Peep, she was awesome. So we get up there to Charlie's squad. We get up there to the SAM site, and we set up, and we kind of do a horseshoe with the FOB to our rear and do a 180 type defensive perimeter. Well, Coalition forces immediately start pressing because they don't know where exactly we're at, I don't think, and they weren't sure where our lines were at, and I think they were trying to push their SAM site out a little bit further on their defense to give them a little bit of buffer, and they run into our lines. I mean, immediately right off the bat, I had two of the three of my guys take out two or three of the Coalition forces, and they pulled back. Then they'd probe us, and then they'd pull back. One of the interesting aspects of it was actually being in a defensive position. And that's one of the hardest things I've ever noticed about Airsoft, is being in a defensive position and staying in that defensive position for any extended period of time, because most Airsofters don't want to defend. They want to be out there shooting BBs. They want to go to town. I got to applaud Charlie Squad because they did an amazing job at following orders. I mean, I know we got stuck in the defensive position for a good, I think it was like 3 to 4 hours that we defended the SAM site before we got pulled off and rotated out. But it was a really interesting aspect to the game, because you had to defend these locations. You had to set up defense on your FOB. You had to set up defense on your SAM site. And if you failed to have that defense on your SAM site, guess what happens? One of the other elements, they come in, the fifth column comes in, or a coalition comes in, they hit your SAM site, knock it out, you're getting hammered. And it's just a short period of time before it happens. So you always had to be thinking about rotating your squads through, making sure they're not getting overwhelmed with guarding, you know, the SAM site for too long, making sure they're getting some fun time. So we covered the SAM site, had a really good time with that, got pushed a couple of times, watched them try to flank in. We only had one time where they actually overwhelmed us. And something to think about here is BRG was about 60 players, 60 or 60, a little bit less than 60 players. Coalition forces and Fifth Column were roughly 100 to 110, maybe a little bit more than that. They had a lot of players on each side. I mean, I think their numbers were supposed to be at 100 to 20 apiece, and we were supposed to be at 60. it made it really interesting, because what it allowed Black River Group to do was is we really had to stick together and work as a team, but at the same time, small little groups. And I told my squad this, and it was kind of funny, because before we start getting geared up, I give my squad a little brief about how we don't want to really be Rambo running around on our own, going out there. We don't have the numbers to do that. We need to cover each other, cover the fob, all that good stuff. And I'm going to tell you guys a little story here. Bo Peep, Angry, and Roscoe from JTAC, they had been tasked. I tasked them with going up and checking on the SAM site. Well, in the process of doing that, they pushed out a little bit further past the SAM site. And it's funny to me because Angry comes back and he goes, "Don't be mad at us. We went Rambo." And I'm like, "No, I'm not mad. You guys stayed as a team. You stayed together. It's good to go. You guys had fun." Well, they went out and they found this old, dirty, like, bathrobe that had probably been laying out there for years, and there was a shemagh with it. Well, they decide to dress up Bo Peep in this shemagh and this bathrobe, and she comes running up to the, you know, walking up to the coalition forces, acting like one of the villagers. So they coalition sends some guys out, and Roscoe and Angry set up an ambush on them. I mean, it's a perfect classic design for a impromptu hasty ambush with bait as the pull. And the coalition, of course, figures it out, wipes them out. They come back. They had a blast doing it. I mean, it's a good little story about what Black River Group was kind of allowed to do within the confines of the game. It's literally, it was limitless on what we were allowed to do. So for most of the day, during the daylight hours, there was a lot of back and forth about who was going to work with who was taking whose SAM site. We got pulled off the SAM site defense and got sent up to reinforce the Raider squad. We had Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Raiders, and QRF. So we had five squads. Raider squad had pushed into coalition forces and gotten into a little bit of trouble, and they're surrounded. So Charlie came up. We swung up. We cut in between from the southwest, hit a squad that was trying to come in behind the Raider squad, wiped them out, turned around, and got online and pushed forward. Now, this is another lessons learned. And I've seen it before, and it's always interesting. Command and control is almost key when it comes to very dense forest terrain, when you're trying to keep people online, especially in an environment where if you get cut off by yourself, you're going to get lost or you're going to get wiped out really quick. You have to consolidate your forces. So it's key to continue to talk, to continue to motivate, to continue to move people forward, making sure they're staying online, staying together. Because when Charlie come up, we hit that first squad, I had him online, we spun around, did a 180, we took off online again, and as soon as we started pushing up, those individuals that decided they're going to try to push out a little bit further away from everything quickly realized that they were cut off from their own friendly lines and were almost overrun and enveloped. But what we did was, as we kept online, we pushed forward, used overwhelming firepower and communication, and pushed, I think, close to two coalition squads back and away, taking the weight off of Raiders. Well, at the same time, we were working with 5th Column, and what they did, 5th Column was doing, was raiding the coalition forces' assets because they didn't leave anybody back really at the FOB. So it gave a double buffer, allowing the 5th Column to come in behind us, move the assets out, and Raider to get reevaluated, get reorganized, get regrouped, and ready to move out again. That's one of the key things is when you're moving in that type of environment and you're dealing with those types of situations, people want to be aggressive, and that's great, but they can at times be overly too aggressive and push too far forward. And as soon as they do, others are going to want to hang back and hold up, because as soon as they see one person hit, they're going to stop and they're going to pause for a minute, and then they go, "Okay, I need to take cover." And that's going to cause your line to shift. It's going to cause your line to slow down and even falter at times. So what you want to do is keep everybody online, moving together at the same time. And if that individual gets hit, they get pulled back, moved, so the medic can get to them, and the line just consolidates and keeps moving forward. It works really well, and it allows that command and control. So that was the first time Charlie's squad kind of got blooded. We walked into we moved in, hit them, did a really good job. Come back, reconsolidated, and then it was just kind of a constant. We'd bounce between the SAM site and the FOB, a little bit out to the checkpoint. Well, during the process of all this, Fifth Column was getting more and more and more antsy with us, with BRG, because our leadership had decided to do some deals and with Coalition, with Fifth Column. It kept going back and forth. It was a lot of fun because, like I said, you had to identify your targets. You were never sure who you were working for, so communication with headquarters was vital to making sure you weren't firing on the wrong group and causing an incident within itself. So we eventually got to go into the village, and it was a lot of fun because the village was like nothing I'd really ever seen in Airsoft before. I mean, it's not really a village. It's more of a cobbled together town with a bunch of pallets that, I mean, I leaned against the wall at the jail and I almost thought I knocked the whole place over. It's just rickety. It's great. It adds so much immersion to the event. And that's one of the key things about it. During that whole weekend, from the time I walked into the BRG fob to the time I walked out of the BRG fob into the parking lot, I felt like I was in Rhodesia. I was in that environment. The immersion was that great. It was just in depth. It was a lot of fun. The characters you get to deal with, like I worked with Colonel Mustard on Facebook. I put up Colonel Mustard can be my battle buddy any day. The guy was amazing. He was a blast. It was a lot of fun. We did a lot of goofy, crazy stuff. APD, Amani Police Department, those guys were, they were a hoot. I've got to deal with them a lot. We were running different types of deals with them. And at one point in time, we'd kind of gotten kicked out of the village by Fifth Column because Fifth Column decided to say, screw it. They walked in and started shooting up everybody because the village was kind of a green zone. You could not go into the village with a magazine in your weapon. If you had a magazine in your weapon, you got arrested. The cops would arrest you and they'd throw you in jail. You'd have to either get paid or pay your way out or get busted out or get paid out by your side. You know, there's all this other stuff. So there was an actual economy going into play. I'm going to talk about that here in a bit. So at one point in time throughout the thing, my squad hadn't gotten the chance to get in the village, and I really wanted to get them into the village because I know a lot of them, that was kind of the cumulative, one of the things they wanted to do is get in there and do a little role-playing with the villagers and stuff. Well, and we'd just gotten paid. I mean, we just got a check for like 14 billion Rhodesian dollars, which literally translates to maybe 20 bucks, I mean, in real-world money, but it was hilarious. Because they hand me a check for $14 billion and then they hand me a bonus for being on Charlie. And I'm like, this is the most money I've ever seen in my life. So I had to take a picture of it. So I got a picture of it. But so we just got paid. Most of my squad hadn't been able to go into the town. So here comes rolling up. We set up this impromptu checkpoint on the road outside the village so we could watch the village. We hadn't seen Alpha had gone into the village on Liberty. And we hadn't seen him come back out. And Fifth Column had wiped out most everybody in the village, was chasing people out, shooting everybody up. So we feared the worst. So I was trying to find out some information. And there was this shady guy, and I never caught his name, but he was basically a drug dealer out of the village. And he kept trying to work a deal with our leadership. Our leadership was like, nope, we already got another deal in place. So he wanted to kind of win good graces. So I made a deal with him to find out information about Alpha, where Alpha Squad was at. So he goes in, finds out Alpha Squad had either, they're all dead and respawn or headed back to the FOB, or they were kidnapped prisoners. Nobody was sure of what. So we're dealing with this guy. Well, then at the same time, here comes the Amani Police Department, comes rolling up in their little scooter. Comes in behind us, and they're like, what do you guys want to do? I'm like, what do you mean, what do we want to do? Well, we like you guys. You guys have worked really well with us. What do you want to do? Well, I'm not thinking anything at the moment. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't think the mayor of Amani likes Black River Group. For all that Black River Group's done for him, I don't think he likes him. Let's replace the mayor. And the cops are like, okay, let's do it. So they take off into town. Well, we realized that Fifth Column had pulled out, so I moved my squad up into the town, and we're kind of standing there watching the whole situation, and all the cops have got the mayor over by his little hut, and they're talking and hooting and hollering and having a good time, and all of a sudden, one of the cops pulls out a pistol and shoots him in the leg. Down goes the mayor, and he's moaning, and I'm like, what's going on? The rest of my squad's going, okay, our Chewy, our medic, he's like, do I go up and medic him? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's hold on. Let's see what happens. So they're hooting and a hollering, and the chief of police is hooting and a hollering, and then he shoots the mayor again in the back and kills him. And he's like, new mayor, I'm the new mayor. And then Colonel Mustard's like, wait a minute, we need to vote. It was just something completely different, utterly a blast to watch and be part of. And you had an impact on everything that happened in that town. I mean, jumping forward, there was an incident where Fifth Column attacked the town, and we were trying to get out of the medic tent. And I stuck my head around, and it was sitting beside the bank, and I noticed that the back of the bank was open, but it had a bunch of stuff barricading it. And the banker, she's tucked up underneath of the counter, and she's got this pistol in her hand. And I stick my head around the corner, and I look at her, and I'm like, if you want help, you need to help us. And she's like, what do you need? I'm like, move this stuff so I can push guys through here. So she literally comes out and grabs stuff and moves it out of the way so we can push through to get a better foothold on moving out and clearing the rest of the village. So, I mean, dealing with the civilians inside the town, you could gamble, you could go to the arms dealership. They had patches and dead rags and all kinds of doodads and hoo-haws. Compfire, I'm jealous of Compfire because he bought a fedora. I don't know where he got it at. I couldn't find one. I wanted one myself, but he bought a fedora there in the village with Rhodesian dollars. Just all kinds of crazy stuff was going on, and it was a lot of fun. Every time you go in there, I mean, there was one point in time we went into the village and we're sitting there, and I got the most amazing bowl of corn chowder I have ever had in my life. I don't know what it was other than it was corn chowder. It was amazing. I need to find the recipe for it because it was amazing. Sitting there eating the corn chowder, and these two coalition guys come up, and they're asking a bunch of the other BRG, how do you guys make all this money? Because at this point in time, we'd gotten a mission to literally go crash the economy. Go cash your checks and spend every bit of your money on the economy because it would cause inflation. Make the Rhodesian dollar raise higher than what it already was. So like when we went in there, a bowl of chowder was $2 billion Rhodesian dollars. By the time my squad got done, it bumped up to $5 billion Rhodesian dollars for a bowl of chowder. So you had impact, a real world impact on everything that was going on in the inside of Rhodesia. So we're sitting there and these two coalition guys come up and they go, hey, so how do you guys make all this money? And one of the guys turns around and goes, Lex, you can answer this, right? And I looked at him and we're like, well, first off, you need to grow up. You're a little too young to be mercenaries. Secondly, you need to get out. When you get out of coalition forces, you come talk to us. And he's like, okay, sounds good. Maybe I'll do that. And then I looked at him and I'm like, third, you need more facial hair. That scruff you got going on in your chin just doesn't cut it. They thought that was hilarious. So, you know, just that kind of interaction we were having with players. So one, a good buddy of mine, Chris Barr, was over on Commander Giggles, was over on the fifth column side of it. The only time I ever run into him in the field, every time I run into him, he was shooting at me. It was great. Just a lot of stuff happened, and it was a really amazing game, a really good time to go down. It was really, the immersion was great. The tactical aspect was really awesome. Because there was at no point in time where we really didn't just, we just mobbed. You always moved out in a squad. You always moved out in some type of formation. I mean, the players that I was playing with were really in depth in their tactics. They were really involved with it. They really enjoyed it. They were always concerned about security, always concerned about making sure we had areas checked and covered. Two of the guys that come down with us with Buffalo, they'd have made their permanent home. The checkpoint on the border, if they could have been allowed to, they had a blast just standing the checkpoint. And of course, the checkpoint was one of those areas I didn't get to really do anything with. I wish I could have. You could stand up the checkpoint, and people could pay you bribes to come through the checkpoint if you were willing to accept the bribe, depending on who it was. So that checkpoint was really cool. They had a taxi, this blue van, and I felt so bad for the driver. This blue van would go, he'd go between each fob, you know, and you could pay him Rhodesian dollars to transport you to the fobs. Well, Fifth Column was really, really heavily using this van, and they were constantly trying to run into our fob with this van, and we kept ambushing them. Well, it just so happened it was getting really dark. We'd gotten the nuke about 10 o'clock at night. from APD just rolls up, and it's got it in the back of their thing, and they're like, hey, you guys did us a favor. We're giving you the nuke, doing you a favor. So we're like, okay, we got to hide this. So we took it off in the middle of nowhere and hit it, and we put a four-man fire team on guard over the nuke for 2 hours at a time. I took the second shift with three other guys. It was Dice, Chewy, and I can't remember the other guy. It was a hoot. I mean, we all were like, where else can you sit out for 2 hours in the middle of nowhere listening to combat going on up on the side of the hill, freezing yourself to death because it was like a 10-degree difference down in this valley where we're at and up on the hill, watching weird lights go off, all this kinds of stuff. I mean, it was just amazing to do it. We'd just gotten back, and me and Dice decide we're going to go into the village. So we're gathering other people up, and we're headed into the village. Well, we get a call across the radio. Smokey is sitting on the outside of the village, and he goes, hey, incoming. Fifth Column has hired the taxi, and they got a bunch of guys in there. So me, Dice, Chewy, a couple other guys, we run up into the tree line and set up a hasty ambush. And I hope somebody got it on recorded. I didn't have my camera on. It was the perfect hasty ambush. We set up on the left side of the road. The van pulls in, and they literally, the driver's got his window down. Literally, you can hear him in the van, 3, 2, 1, go, and they stop right in front of us. We start lighting up the driver. One of the cool things that, and I can't believe I'm admitting this is cool, I really like it now, is they require you to have a weapon light on your weapon at night. And when you start to shoot, you have to turn that weapon light on, unless you have a tracer unit. I didn't think I was going to like it. I love it. Being able to flip that light on, and I mean, I had like a 1,000 lumen flashlight on there. Flipping that thing on, being able to see my targets, they can't really see me because of the brightness of the light, and I'm just shooting stuff, was a blast. Well, when we lit that van up, it was like a clown car. Guys were just crawling out of this thing, falling over top of each other, just dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, you know, just all over the place. There was targets everywhere. Well, and we had the Buffalo up by the fob. They flip on their lights, start lighting up the other side with the RPK. I don't think anybody made it out of that alive. I think we pretty much hammered that whole squad. It was a beautiful, hasty ambush. So we get done with that. Myself and Chewy got hit by a guy that snuck in behind us. Medics come up, get us taken care of. We go into the village. Well, we're sitting in the village. We're kind of hee-hawing around. You know, there's not a whole lot going on in the village. Well, we decide we're going to go sneak in on Fifth Column and see if we can turn off their SAM site so our aircraft can come in and bomb them. Because at this point in time, it's close to 3 o'clock in the morning, I think. And we'd been going back and forth, doing security checks, just going nonstop. It was a lot of fun. And at one point in time, we had to chase a sniper down. We were hunting a sniper. They would send snipers in, and you'd get sniper fire from the outside, and you have to go and chase them down. I've never had so much fun as sneaking out of my own fob to grab casualties, bring them back into the medic, and then sneaking back out and hunting a sniper in pitch black. And snipers aren't required to have flashlights or tracer units on their weapons. And it was funny because there was this one, he kept sneaking in and doing a really good job. He'd pick off one or two guys, then he'd move. Well, we were seeing these little glowing spots. He had tracer rounds in his sniper rifle, or he had glow-in-the-dark BBs or something. Or somebody had been with him and were dropping them. But we started following this trail of dropped glow-in-the-dark BBs. And that's where we were able to find his hide. We didn't find him because he'd pulled off and decided to go back to the fob at that point. But it was a lot of fun just going out there and hunting down the sniper in pitch darkness. You know, this pitch black. So 3 o'clock in the morning, myself, Dice, Chewy, Angry, and Bo Peep decide we're going to go sneak into the Fifth Column SAM site, turn it off so our aircraft can bomb them. Bomb Fifth Column. So we start moving out through there. We start headed towards the village. We go into the village. Nothing's going on in the village. So we cut off to the right-hand side of going out into the tree line. Well, we get about halfway out, and we're just far enough out from the lights of the village that they can't. We're in the shadows. And here comes these two Fifth Column guys, diddy-bopping up the road. Had to have looked right at us, because I just halted everybody and told them, stop, stand still, don't move. Everybody's standing there, and I know all of them are thinking, oh, we're going to get hit, and these guys just kept on moving. And it was cool, because Dice goes, they didn't see us. It's like, yeah, if you don't, your eyeballs pick up on movement. If you don't move and you're in the shadows, they're not going to pick up on that movement. They're not going to see you. It was a cool little moment there because it was kind of one of those teaching moments where, you know, working at night, and a lot of groups, a lot of people don't get to do a lot of night operations. And when they do, they don't necessarily, they rely so heavily on night vision that it's insane. So actually using the shadows to your advantage and everything else, learning how to operate in the night is a lot of fun. And it's a cool, I like doing it a lot. So we moved up, moved into the tree line. We get up there and realize that coalition forces are hitting Fifth Column's FOB pretty heavily on our right-hand side. So we decide to pull back and kind of wait it out to see what happens because we didn't want to get contact in the chaos. And their war machine, their tank, had this floodlight, and it was just flooding everything. So we kind of pull back into the bushes, and we're waiting and sitting there waiting and watching. Fifth Column sends some guys up along our left-hand side. I mean, they walked right by us. They didn't even see us. And so we decide that we're going to pull back and kind of mess with them. And Bo Peep and Angry decide they're going to go over and hook up with the coalition forces and let them know what we're doing. Well, the game plan was is we're going to pull back and move a little bit further over to our left and then move up. And I have a whistle on my gear for signaling or whatnot. I'm going to blow the whistle and Dice and Chewy are going to start screaming, telling people to get online, you know, move forward. We're going to make them think that we're actually attacking them with more numbers than what we have. So Bo Peep and Angry disappear off to our right. We move over to the left, give it about 15, 20 seconds, or you know, actually it's more than about an hour, a minute, minute and a half. And I blow that whistle, and it is loud. Blow the whistle, and Dice and Chewy start screaming at the top of their lungs, get online, get online, move up, move forward, move up, Alpha. And you can just hear Fifth Column, oh, wait, we're going to get attacked. So we're giggling like madmen. We cut off behind us, run off to our left a little bit further, move over, do it again. And they think now they've got two sides that are being attacked, plus the coalition forces attacking them on their right-hand side. They're shooting. We're watching tracer BBs go everywhere. It's like Star Wars shooting at ghosts. There's nobody out there, but they're shooting at everything. So then we move over to the village, move up onto the village on the backside of the village, push up to the Fifth Coalition's or Fifth Column's left flank, do it one more time, and you can hear them in there. Alpha's out there online. They're going to hit us. Get online. We need more people out here for defense. We're giggling like mad, so we pull back, and we're giggling, sneak up on the van, because it's got guys in it, get some Starburst out of the van, which was awesome, because it actually advertised on the side it had free candy, got some free candy out of it, moved back to the FOB, and kind of watched our defense, and moved around from there. I mean, that was one of the greatest events of the evening I had. I had a lot of fun. If you haven't had the chance to go to Rhodesian Revolt, I highly recommend you go to Rhodesian Revolt. It's a lot of fun. It's a very immersive event. For me, this has been one of the first events that I've really had the sense of accomplishment. And it's not because I managed to stay up for 24 hours or I did everything, you know. I don't know what it was. I really don't. Other than the fact that I had this overwhelming sense of accomplishment. We finished the event at 9 o'clock. We got attacked by Fifth Column in the village. I had a small squad up in the village of BRG. We get attacked. Coalition come in and helped us out. I could go on telling stories all day long, but I'm going to end up running out of time here. Did the award ceremony, did the raffles at 9, everybody starts gearing up, and I have this thing that if I walk in, I walk out. If I ruck in, I ruck out. So everybody's getting ready to go, everybody's pulling vehicles in, they're throwing their stuff in, people are off and rides. I'm like, nope, I'm good to go. And it's not that I'm trying to be elitist or anything else, it's just me personally. If I walk in, I'm walking out. So we get the buffalo loaded, buffalo heads out, and I pick up my pack and I start out, and I walk out. Same gear I brought in, same gear I brought out. Just a little lighter because I ate some stuff out of my MRE. But for the most part, in and out was the same way. And I hit the parking lot and I had this overwhelming sense of accomplishment. It was a lot of fun. I don't know why I had this sense of accomplishment, but I did. And I've never seen it. I've never really had it that in depth at any other game. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, Rhodesian Revolt is one of those events that if you don't get the chance to go to it, you really need to go to it. I've been trying for the last 4 years. This year it was in the cards and I made it. Next year it's definitely going to be in the cards and I'm going to go to it. A lot of lessons learned. A lot of things I realized that I need to get. Like I need a sleeping mat and a field pillow. You know, some creature comforts are good. Outside of that, I want to say thank you to the Weapons Blenders guys. The sandbox is amazing. Rhodesian Revolt's amazing. I'm highly looking forward to it next year. I will definitely be back there again next year. Thank you to Charlie Squad, Alpha Squad, Buffalo, all the BRG guys, all the Fifth Column guys, all the Coalition guys. It was a blast. With that, I'm going to wrap this up. Be safe, be honorable. I'll see you on the field.
Remember the four rules of gun safety. Always treat your gun as if it were loaded. Keep your fingers straight and off the trigger until you intend to fire. Do not point your airsoft gun at anything you do not intend to shoot. Know your target and what's behind it. Always wear full CLAP protection, rated to ANSI Z81.7 standards. Keep your airsoft guns in a case or bag until you are on the field. Only conduct your airsoft activities on approved fields, or on private land with owner's written consent, or public lands with consent of local law enforcement. The Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast is not liable for any criminal action, injury, harm or damage caused by any person or persons utilizing the information presented. Be safe, be honorable and have fun. Questions or comments, find us on Facebook under Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast.